escapes Leupold's reach. And Tavares makes a move with 27 to go. Away from Ponik. Nice move to the net. Tavares, the shot, they score! Islanders win it in overtime!
Islanders country, hello and welcome to the Isles Blog Podcast. I'm Joe Bono. A reminder, you can follow the entire team on Twitter at Isles Blog, and you can subscribe to the podcast via iTunes or listen at nyislesblog.com. Our guest today played hockey professionally before transitioning to the media. He's a feature writer and editor for The Score. Definitely check out their app, and also has ties of the genetic kind to the New York Islanders, and that's Justin Bourne. Justin, Joe Bono for the Isles Blog Podcast. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, Joe, thanks for having me, man. Looking forward to it.
And be sure to follow Justin on Twitter, at JT Bourne. So, Justin, you tweeted this before face-off last night. Genuinely dislike caring this much about a single game in a sport prone to bounces, but here we are, go Isles, and as it would have it, it's a Rick Nash, quote, shot off Ryan Strome's skate that ends up being the deciding goal in last night's game.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than being right on Twitter sometimes. I tell you, that was a little bit frustrating, but I mean, you know how it goes, like with hockey, there's so much talent out there and the game is so fast and that puck is so small. It's just, you know, anything can happen on a given night. And so even if you genuinely believe that you have the better team, you know, it's always scary when it comes down to a one game affair. You know, I think of my family, well, not necessarily my close family, my best friends in Kelowna, BC, rooting for the Canucks against the Bruins in a Game 7 Stanley Cup final. You know, sometimes it's just out of your control and you have some bad luck. So as much as I believe that the Isles can beat the Rangers, last night I was a little nervous going into the game, and unfortunately came out to be true.
Overall, I thought the Islanders played a pretty good game, considering how flat they came out in Toronto and had a rally in the third, and then obviously Tavares with the great individual effort in overtime. Despite losing again to the Rangers 2 in a row, I think Islander fans were satisfied with the level of play and how the team battled and how they possessed the puck, the route. Ultimately, I think outside of moments in the second period, I think the Islanders actually were the better team last night.
Yeah. No, I absolutely agree. I will say this. The Rangers scare me, like legitimately scare me. I feel like not just do they have the talent, because they certainly have enough talent on that team to win on any given night. I really believe that Alain Vigneault is a really good coach. I think he's, you know, he's gone the distance. He's pretty savvy. His general record as a coach is really solid. And he's got some guys, you know, I'm thinking of Rick Nash, someone who might be really hungry. And he has the tools to make it work. So I'm scared of the Rangers. And the worst part about all that is knowing this year, it could come down to Nassau Coliseum at some point versus the Rangers. And I just really don't want to play a savvy coach. As much as I want that series and everyone wants that series, I just have so much respect for Vigneault that it kind of scares me.
Yeah, Rangers certainly battle-tested, and Vigneault leading them all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals against the Kings a year ago. So, I mean, now, you know, still a month to play. As we're recording this, the Rangers just 1 point behind with 4 games in hand. Is it now about just staying ahead of Pittsburgh and maintaining home ice for that first round of the playoffs for the Islanders? Or should Islander fans be kind of almost preparing themselves to concede the Metropolitan Division at this point?
I mean, I don't think the Isles are going to finish first in the Metro. I do think the Rangers are going to end up with that spot. But if you look at the teams in the Metro, it's so funny because like a year or two ago, the Metro was kind of a punchline. And looking at it now, it's like, who do you want to play? Do you want to play Pittsburgh? Do you want to play the Capitals? You know, do you want to play the Rangers? Not really is the answer to all those. But to get to the finals, just like every year in any league, you're going to have to beat some good teams to get there. So I'm not overly concerned about their first round matchup all that much. I feel like whoever they end up facing, they're going to be probably 50-50 to beat. So, you know, I wouldn't get too caught up in the race for first in the Metro. As cool as it would be, because we've suffered for so long, as cool as it would be for them to win the Metro or to, you know, right now they could potentially, you know, win the President's Trophy if they got on a great run. Those things would be cool, but I'm not too worried because we're going to have to beat 2 good teams in the first 2 rounds regardless. So I'm not too stressed about it.
Isles Blog Podcast, Justin Bourne is our guest. Follow him on Twitter at JT Bourne. Download the Score app. Kyle Oposo, in his return, did not start the game on the top line, but did see time with Tavares and Bailey at points during the night. What were your impressions of Oposo in game one back from the eye injury?
I mean, I get what Capuano's doing there. You know, the guy is not, if you ask any player, they'll tell you the only way to get in game shape is to play games. So it's really hard to practice hard enough to do the stops and starts and the little fast twitch muscle exercises you use in the game to get in game shape. So I get trying to work him in there casually a little bit. But it's one of those things where he's so clearly that guy on that line. He's so clearly Tavares' wingman that I kind of think they should just stick him with Tavares, let him get his legs under him, and instead of faking it and letting him play with someone he's not going to play with, you know, let's just get back to where we need to be here. So personally, I think he looks good. He's going to be just fine. And I'd like to see him play with Tavares from here on out.
I think most fans agree that Oposo should ultimately be back with John Tavares. The person that keeps on coming up in the last game, a lot of chatter on Twitter about this, and he didn't really help his cause yesterday, is Josh Bailey and whether or not he should remain on the top line. There are Bailey apologists. There are Bailey haters. They were out in full effect, especially after that breakaway attempt against Cam Talbot. Where do you stand when it comes to Josh Bailey?
This season did a lot to change my opinion. You know, Garcinot has done a lot of great things with contracts over the last, you know, whatever, 10 years, 5-10 years. And he's taken some risks and he said, okay, we're going to give Andrew McDonald 4 years at $2 million total. And he ended up being at least a daily guy. And that's a good deal, having a daily guy at that cheap. He did that with Franz Nielsen. He did that with Kyle Okposo. He's done it with Travis Hamonic, which is ridiculous that Hamonic signed that deal because he's getting ripped off for the next, you know, X amount of years. Bailey was – it's never really gone wrong, and I kind of thought Bailey was the one time it wasn't going to pan out. This year, I thought the money they're paying Bailey, it worked out. You know, I'll take that trade, that money for the Josh Bailey we've had this year. But you're right. There's definitely still a part of me that thinks he's not quite ever going to be what we all hope he can be. But if he can at least be a contributor, at least be someone who moves the puck in the right direction and all that, I'll take him at that price and at that risk. So, you know, I'm neither a hater nor an apologist. I think he's just going to end up being the color beige for us. It's not going to kill us. It's not going to put us over the top. It's just Josh Bailey is going to be Josh Bailey.
Should he stay on the top line, though, Justin? I mean, obviously, Andersley, I mean, he's been producing regardless of who he's playing with. And then a lot of fans throughout the year have said, why not give Ryan Strom a shot on that line as well? Do you think Bailey ends up being the top line winger come playoff time?
I mean, I don't know whether he will or not because I don't really know what Capuano thinks of him, but I don't think he's a first line winger. So, no, I don't think he should be on that top line. I think that some of the kids, you know, everyone was so excited this year about Grabowski and Kuhlman, and justifiably so. They're terrific depth. But I really believe that the big jump in talent has been that Lee and Nelson and Strome and those guys have taken a stride, you know, on top of shoring up those other guys like Grabowski and Kuhlman. But, you know, with Bailey, I feel like I'd rather see one of the kids who could develop into a legitimate, you know, top winger. I'd rather see one of them get the chance to be that. The only issue there is Bailey has to play with people who can play offensively or he's kind of useless. So I'm torn, man. I wish I could give you a definitive answer. He's a, you know, he's a second.
I think Islanders country
liner.
Is torn as well.
Yeah, I agree. I think everyone is. It's a tough situation. Hopefully they can find somewhere for him to fit in, because if it isn't on an offensive line, we can't use him. So I guess you got to give him a shot at some point. I don't know.
I saw someone tweet out last night that if Josh Bailey scored the game-winning goal for the Stanley Cup in overtime, people would complain that it was too late into overtime. And that's kind of how it's done. Even when he does something right, there was something wrong that could be pointed out on that specific play.
What's so funny is how everyone is viewed through the context of their contract, though. What if he was a waiver pickup this year, you know, like a guy like that? I kind of wish we didn't know salaries, because I think people would like him a lot more if they didn't know how much the Isles committed to him. Anyway.
Yeah, salary, draft position, obviously a guy that was not afforded the same luxury as maybe Ryan Strome and Brock Nelson and Anders Lee were able to kind of develop in the system. He was kind of thrust into NHL action, and you forget sometimes that he's just 25 years old. Let's move on to the blue line Nick Leddy out for 2 weeks with an upper body injury. Fortunately for the Islanders, their schedule lightens up, so the games missed will be minimal. Do you think Capuano just stays with Brian Strait in the lineup? He gives Donovan a shot? Or maybe do the Islanders look to Reinhardt or Pulock to come up for a bit of a stint?
You know, I want to sound like a terrible Islanders fan here, but I don't think, you know, I think they can. I absolutely think they can. But I don't think the New York Islanders win the Stanley Cup this year. I just think they're really close to that talent. It's just they're a little bit underage. They're an avocado that's going to be delicious, but they're just not quite ripe yet. So for me, I almost want to see the young guys who are going to be a part of the delicious avocado down the road get a shot. I don't really see the point in trotting someone out there who maybe is going to be better right now, but isn't going to be down the road. I think that exposure is good for the young kids. And I don't necessarily want to see Griffin Reinhardt. I'd like to see Pulock a little bit. I feel like I haven't been exposed to him enough, but I understand it's really tempting right now, given their place in the standings and given the fan mood and the situation with the Coliseum, to do the very, very best you can this year. So it's a really tough situation. I don't envy the people that have to actually make that decision.
Islanders making a couple trades at the deadline. One of them to pick up Tyler Kennedy. Showed why they picked him up in the Toronto game. High energy player. But now, once again, the Islanders have a line of questions. Grabner was scratched on Tuesday. Krabowski obviously could be back at some point. How does Capuano juggle these lines here in the final month of the season? It's a good problem to have, but it makes it difficult night in and night out to put the best lineup out there.
Yeah, it's really funny that you mentioned that. My wife and I went to the Isles game here in Toronto on Monday, and we both watched the game last night too. And I guess, you know, like, I've seen Tyler Kennedy play for years, but both nights I was like, man, that guy can fly. Like, he is a terrific skater. He really can get around the ice. It's pretty impressive. And then I was looking at the lineup and I was like, all right, he's played so well. We got to have Tyler Kennedy in the next night. I was looking at who to take out. I was like, okay, well, you can take out Michael Grabner, who also can fly. You know, I thought, well, maybe Casey Cizikas, but doesn't quite work position wise, but Cizikas has been terrific. So it's an awesome problem to have. I again, don't really envy the decision-making here, but I can't remember a time in, God, I don't know how long, that I thought about the list of Islanders forwards and been like, I don't really know who to take out. Usually there's some guy that you're like, okay, get rid of that clown. But this is an awesome problem. I'm pretty pumped as a fan.
And what were your thoughts on the other trade, bringing in Michael Neuwirth? From Buffalo, been okay in his first two games, not great. You know, some people felt that, you know, I even heard Steven Valiquette say this on Hockey Night Live, that he could push Halak for playing time down the stretch and even potentially in the postseason. Obviously, things just didn't work out for Chad Johnson, and he suffers an injury in practice with the Sabres. What's your thoughts on Neuwirth here and what you saw out of him in his first two outings for the Isles?
Just the most underrated pickup, I think, of the trade deadline was picking up Neuwirth. Here's a guy who is still young, right? He's 26 years old, and the goaltender's prime is significantly older than, you know, say, a forwards. So he still has time to come into his own. In Washington, he was becoming the guy. Like, he was the guy for a good Capitals team. And then he got hurt, and he sort of lost his position to Braden Holtby, who is also, you know, he's a legitimate number one starter, and Holtby got the chance to prove that he's the guy, and Neuwirth sort of got pushed out. And then, you know, he's off in Buffalo, which, I mean, you know, Buffalo. So he never really had the chance to win there, but put up spectacular numbers. I mean, I think he's a 918 playing for the Sabres. Like, that's incredible. So you pick up a kid who's 26 who could be a legitimate number one in the NHL. Kind of reminds me of Bobrovsky in a way, and you know, I don't want the Isles to have a goaltending controversy. I think it's unhealthy coming down the stretch in a year. You think you can contend. But I think that going forward, having Halak and Neuwirth, whoever ends up taking the reins, it's great to have that problem. Again, too many good players, not an issue.
Justin Bourne is our guest on the Isles Blog podcast. Joe Bono with you. Follow him on Twitter at JT Bourne. John Tavares now leading the league in scoring. The Hart Trophy favorite has changed multiple times this season. Patrick Kane, an early favorite. Obviously, the injury kind of takes him out of consideration. A big push now for Carey Price. How strong, though, is the case for Tavares to be the first Isles Hart Trophy winner since Brian Trottier?
You know, it's really strong. It's just unfortunate that Carey Price is having the season he's having for Tavares' sake. Carey Price is blowing away, like, historical goaltending records when you adjust for era. He is – this year's been silly. I mean, in all realism, the Montreal Canadiens are a team that would be fighting for a playoff spot that is now fighting to potentially, you know, win the President's Trophy because of one man. You know, and it depends how you define most valuable player. And I don't care about for the concept of most valuable to his team because it hasn't historically been voted that way. I tend to think of the player who provides the most value, as in if everyone were in a pool, who is the most valuable? And Carey Price to me has been that this year. John Tavares is a runner up. You know, to me, he's in the mix. He'll be a final nominee, probably with Alex Ovechkin, who's been terrific for the Capitals. But it's just Carey Price's season has been absurd. I don't know if you watched the game last night against Tampa where he made 63,000 amazing saves and then one went in on a bank in OT and lost 1-0. You know, like, what more can the guy do but go score? He's just been amazing.
And what have you seen from John Tavares this year, maybe differently than years past? Here at Isles Blog, Connor Moore kind of, you know, coined the hashtag Heel Tavares because we've seen an angry John Tavares at times, taking some bad penalties, slashes, things like that. But you've also seen a more vocal John Tavares as the captain of the Islanders. So what have you seen differently this year, both from on the ice and maybe also off the ice demeanor-wise from the Islander captain?
You know, what's funny is I wrote an article that I never published because I didn't think it would be well received enough, but where I basically said that I fully support John Tavares taking a zillion penalties. This is a league now where, you know, it used to be Wayne Gretzky could just, you know, float around the ice, find the open areas. No one would touch him because Dave Semenko would beat the crap out of him. You know, Clark Gillies played on line with Trache and Bossy because don't touch Trache and Bossy. That's not a thing these days. And that's, you know, enforcers are sort of disappearing, you know, for the reason that it's kind of a waste of a roster spot if you have a more talented guy. Today, the best players in the NHL have to go to the dirty areas. Sidney Crosby, some people call him a whiner, they call him a diver. But you know what? It's because he has the puck all the time in the dangerous areas all the time. And I think it's healthy that when people know they can't take liberties on those guys. So when someone comes at Crosby, I mean, I don't know how many fights he has in his career. It might be a half dozen, but at this point, he's not just going to sit there and take that. And Tavares has kind of become that guy where it's like, look, he'll get physical if you want. He'll go to the dirty areas. He'll score those dirty goals to put up the numbers. That's kind of what it takes in today's hockey because no one protects you. So I don't want Tavares getting hurt. When I played junior hockey, my coach would say, you know, I was a goal scorer and I was also kind of soft. He would say, when someone takes a run at you, cross-check them in the mouth. Just, you know, we'll kill off the penalty. We just want people to know, you know, you're not someone to take liberties on. So for me, John Tavares can take all the liberties he wants. You know, we don't want the lazy hooking and holding penalties, but if he wants to give someone a shot in the mouth, I'll take that all day from John Tavares. And that's a definite change I've seen in this game, and that's, I think, why he's leading the NHL in scoring. You cannot abuse the guy.
I think you got to publish the article now, Justin.
Yeah, maybe I will. I'll give it another look and see if I can edit it so I'm not so Isles biased.
A couple more questions for Justin Bourne. Your father, of course, is Bob Bourne. We heard in the fall during a broadcast that he had taken a little bit of a spill back in Arizona. How is he doing health-wise, recovering from that?
He's good. It's one of those things where I think when you've been a professional athlete, you sort of believe you're a little bit invincible at times. And, you know, my father-in-law is Clark Gillies. My father is Bob Bourne. The two of them being New York Islander longtime people, I see this in both of them. I think my dad was like 15 feet up on a ladder pruning a tree at, 61 years old or 60 or 61. So sort of like maybe at some point hire someone to do that. So he took a spill. He crushed 5 ribs, collapsed a lung, all that sort of stuff, and he is 100% back to normal. That was about 5 months ago, and he's played golf since. He's up and at him. He's doing well. So it no concerns over him. He's doing fine.
If he's playing golf, then he's definitely doing fine.
That's the official
you mentioned. So you mentioned, of course, your father, Bob Bourne, father-in-law, Clark Gillies. How closely do they follow what's going on with the Islanders this season? How much, you know, conversation do they have back and forth when everyone is together, or just when you see them? How excited are they about what's been happening this season on Long Island?
Well, I think you need the context of how the Islanders went after they left. They both left in 1986. So since then, the Isles have made playoffs, I believe, three times since 1986. That's almost 30 years. So, you know, there was a time where they got disheartened. You know, I don't hold a grudge against Mike Milbury, but there was an era there where they wanted to sort of get rid of the old dynasty days and create their new history, new jerseys. They got rid of all the old Islander history and stopped inviting those guys to the rink, and they had some hard feelings towards the Islanders. Things changed, and things changed for the better significantly a while back, and they both got back into it, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, and they've been interested. The Isles have treated them like nothing but gold since, and they've been absolutely loving the Isles, just waiting for a reason to be excited again. And I remember the season when the off-season signing happened. They were all just ecstatic, like, you know, actually sending emails back and forth. We had a group chain going, like, the Isles might actually be good this year. What the hell is happening? So they're thrilled. They're, you know, whatever the reasons are for why they've put in the real effort this year, they've been waiting for it forever, and they're very interested. I can assure you they're watching every game and talking about it behind the scenes.
Justin, you were born in 1982, so right in the midst of the dynasty run. You mentioned your father-in-law both retire 1986 or so. In those formative years, any memories of being around the rink, around the guys, pictures with the Stanley Cup? I mean, you're very young there. I mean, was anything routine?
Yeah. Well, to be clear, they both retired in 1988. They left the Isles in 86. Clark went to the Sabres. My dad went to the Kings. So someone asked me on Twitter, I forget how long ago, and actually it might have been you, I'm not too familiar, but someone said, someone said, what's your first memory of being at Nassau Coliseum? And it's sort of like, you know, like, Joe, what's your first memory of the first house you were in? And it's like, I don't know, I just sort of was there. You know, I remember being there, and I remember being in sort of the, wives and girlfriends room, and I remember being... I grew up in the Coliseum until I was 6 years old and eventually moved off to Los Angeles. So I remember the Coliseum well. And what's funny is I didn't go back for 20 years when my dad was inducted. And then 2 years later when I was at New York Islanders camp myself. So, you know, my memories of the Coliseum are shaped sort of in the last 10 years more than they are growing up, but it's just sort of always been a place where I've been. I don't know. It's part of my life very much.
And before we let you go, perfect segue, your thoughts, final season, final month of the regular season at the Nassau Coliseum. We'll see how and when that final game is. As you mentioned at the top, hopefully not against the Rangers at the Coliseum where the Islanders get eliminated. That would be a nightmare. What's your thoughts on this move and leaving Long Island? It's, you know, you're happy that they're sticking around. They're going to be local. But at the same time, it didn't have to come to this. What's your overall thoughts on that?
You know, my thoughts on it were changed when I talked to Brianna's dad, to Clark, about it. I'm very happy that they will remain the Islanders. They will remain with our colors. They will maintain their history. That meant a lot to me. So I'm happy because it could have been much worse. So I'm happy personally for how it's all shooken out. I can still go when I go visit the family in Long Island and all that. That makes me happy. But I know Clark is very disappointed. My dad is disappointed. You know, as much as they're happy that the history will remain unchanged and it will remain the Islanders and all that, you know, the Islanders aren't Brooklyn. The Islanders are Uniondale, Nassau, Suffolk. They're from out there, and those people are not going to get in their cars and head out that way. So they'll do well. They'll have, you know, a new fan base, and success will do them well in that environment. But it's definitely mixed emotions for myself and my family. It could have been worse, but it could have been better too. So it's sort of, you know, sometimes in life you have to compromise. So at this point, I think I'll take it.
Justin Bourne, feature writer, editor at The Score. Be sure to download The Score app. Follow Justin on Twitter at JT Bourne. This was a lot of fun. We appreciate it, and hope we get to do it again sometime soon.
For sure, Joe. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to the Isles Blog Podcast. Visit nyislesblog.com for an archive of the show or subscribe to the podcast via iTunes. Follow the team on Twitter at Isles Blog and send comments to nyislesblog@gmail.com.